Well, welcome to the Repos Non-League Roundup show. And as you can see, Keith, unfortunately, not with us tonight. He's got some personal issues he needs to deal with, so he won't be with us tonight. But I'm over the moon to say, because I've always said this is one statement I've always said about one of the people joining us tonight, and I'll say it once again: if Heineken did chairman, this man's face would be on the front of every single tin of Heineken there is. And it's absolutely fantastic seeing you looking so well, sir. And welcome back, Steve.
Thanks very much. Kind words, David. Not good news for Heineken sales, I don't think.
Well,
Good to see you again.
it's brilliant to see you, sir. I can't tell you how much it is to see you. And I was sitting next to him, the young man sitting next to you on your, well, as I say, on my right, maybe on your left as you're sitting in it where you are. But is Bob Bob? I mean, do you want to tell us all that you do in the club? And then.
Yeah, I mean, I've got back involved with the club a little bit more this season than I have been in the past. When the club first was relaunched back in '92, I spent the first season as part of what was a thriving supporters club. But then in the second season, Paul Chrisman, who was quite a very experienced club secretary at the non-league level, he wanted the experience of being with a new club and getting it up and running. At the end of that season, he said he wanted to move on. And rather stupidly, I said, well, yeah, I'd like to do that. So I spent the next two seasons as club secretary at Romford in the Essex Senior League. And they were quite an exciting couple of years because it was our first venture into the FA Bars and also the following season into the FA Cup. But then once Romford started to play at grounds that were further away, as a non-driver, I kind of dropped out of it for a little while. So once we got back to firstly Brentwood and then Barking, it was a lot easier for me to get back involved. So now what I'm doing is I'm keeping the website up to date and also spending some time at games at the both the first team and the women's team, taking photographs that go onto the website and into the local press, and just basically trying to raise the profile of the club in the media locally.
Absolutely. And of course, also joining us as well, we can forget Millie Bright. We can forget Mary Earps and Jill Scott and all the rest of them, because of course, we've got the lady that brings every footballer into the club. And of course, the captain of the ladies' side in Alice. And Alice, lovely to see you tonight.
Cheers, thank you. Yeah, I get mentioned in sentences with Millie Bright all the time, often compared favourably.
Same position, though, or not?
Yeah, same
Same
position. Yeah,
position.
centre
There we
back.
go.
Yeah.
There we go. Happy days. And Leah Williamson, we can forget all of them. It's just one Alice Sharp, isn't it? Is that what they sing all the time?
All the time.
Well, he sings.
Yeah, it's just me. It's a solo.
Of course, join us later on. Of course, will be our friends from Mousel. They'll come and join us later on as well as we go back down the mousehole with them later on, about 7:45, 7:50 time. They'll come and join us, hopefully, fingers crossed, because I haven't heard anything from them this week, but hopefully they'll be with us at about 7:50 as normal. But I suppose we should start off with what was, sort of caught me off on the hop, I must admit, with your news just recently. But it was the type of news in sort of non-league football that was that made you sort of, I don't know, so happy, even though it's not sort of you maybe your own club, people out there reading your news and all the rest of it. But it's so fantastic to see yourself and of course also Cray Wanderers as well, that have been nomads, I suppose is the word, for quite a number of years, and both getting their own grounds. You already, Cray earlier on in the beginning of the next season. I mean, so how did it come about, and how fantastic news is that for you and the club going forward in a few se in seasons ahead?
Yeah, we had a few sort of what, why, and when moments on social media and what have you. It did happen very, very quickly. I think the demise of sort of East Thurrock has been sort of well publicised, in as much as people knew that they were in some trouble and they'd stopped playing. And it was just our academy manager who, by chance, saw an advert on an estate agent's website saying, football ground for sale, for lease rather, clicked on the link, recognised it as being East Thurrock, and then sort of the negotiations took place over the next 24 hours very, very quickly, which led to Romford Football Club being offered a lease for the foreseeable future. It's not a long-term lease. We don't expect to be there sort of in 7-8 years' time. We know it's not in Romford, but it's great news for the club. It's somewhere at last to call our home. I'm sure you've seen the pictures, David. It's being livered up. All the signage is Romford. The club's crest is everywhere. We're busy painting everything sort of blue and gold. You know, the bar's up and running. There's a really, really good atmosphere there at the moment. Supporters are doing their own fundraising by ways of seeing us how much they can drink before they fall over and leave their meeting. They are, of course, drinking responsibly, I should say, but they are doing all that they can to raise money for the club in their own way. But what it will do is will give us an opportunity to run our own facility, and that will find out, A, whether we've got the whether we're able to do it with the largely volunteer sort of staff that we've got. It will give us time to sort of follow the plans for Westlands in Romford through, but most of all, it will give us A, an identity, and B, an opportunity to have some other income streams that we haven't got, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking that because, of course, when he was with Barkin and others, of course, the income stream is almost zero, isn't it? Because everything goes into the club that you're actually sort of sharing with. So with this, it's going to give you that sort of a bit more of a push as well. And then, so is the long term aim still to get into the Romford area? That he was trying to get into before.
Yeah, we've got new plans that have just been submitted to the council. There's been a slight change because the actual playing fields that we're looking to put the that we were looking to build on, they've built a school in front of the school, if you like, a smaller school for special education. So that means we've had to rejig the plans. But obviously, getting back to Romford is our aim. I mean, I think, you know, we all know that we're non-league. You know, you follow your local team. So your local team, in theory, should be a walk or a bus ride away. It's the same with the other teams that we've got, with the women's team, the girls' team, and the boys' youth teams. They're all playing in the borough of Havering, all within sort of a hop, skip and a jump of sort of Romford town centre, which is as it should be. That said, it was just too good an opportunity for us to pass up, whether it's for sort of 3, 4, 5 seasons. You know, it will give us an opportunity to kick on. It's generated a lot of interest. We're talking to sponsors, both sort of locally in Romford and also in the sort of the Thurrock sort of lakeside area, and it's created a real buzz around the club.
And I've got somebody coming in, trying to come in now. Christos?
Yeah.
Yep, so we'll let Christos.
You can let him in.
But
he'll be able to tell you even more about the deal because he was the one that that brokered it at the time. So he heads up our academy and our youth section and what have you.
So, I mean, with it all now, I mean, it's one of those things where, I mean, what sort of, is it just a men's team playing at the moment or the ladies playing there as well?
No, at the moment it's just there's a main pitch there, and at the moment there's 3 youth pitches marked out at the back of the stadium, and obviously what would be great is to get everyone playing there at one stage. But obviously what we've also got to look at is how much can the pitch take. It would be unfair on the women's team to have them playing on a pitch on a Sunday that had been cut up completely on a Saturday. Ellie will know better than I do where all the players live, whether they drive or don't drive. But the idea is, at some stage, we want all the Romford teams playing very, very close together. But there will be opportunities to move people. But at the moment, there's, you know, the main thing is to just do things one step at a time. So obviously, get the stadium up and running. We've done really well. We've got the last 3 games on and the weather's been awful. So at the moment, it's just getting that up and running and judging by the results from the women, they're quite happy where they are at the moment.
But I mean, before we go on to ladies, though, Steve, I mean, with that sort of, oh, sorry, how much work was needed at East Thurrock when you first got the sort of the lease? Did you go into it and have a look at first before signing the lease, or did you go into it thinking?
Well, I certainly didn't. I don't know whether Christos did or not, but sort of by the time sort of I was sort of, you know, signing bits of paper and what have you, it was sort of a done deal, if you like. But Basildon Town were already playing there, so it wasn't there.
Right.
And East Thurrock hadn't left it in a bad condition. It was just a case of putting our own stamp on it. So, you know, we wanted to get some signs up pretty quickly with the club badge, welcome to Romford. Wanted the turnstile sort of area painted blue, started painting the railings outside. The changing rooms have been completely done up, and the ballroom's is in the process of being redone, and the bar area, which, let's face it, that's where you're hoping most people will come to. That's been painted, you know, TV screens put back up on the wall, projector on the wall and what have you, and sound system put in, and it's looking really, really good at the moment.
Essex Senior League happy as well, you know, with it as well.
They're happy. It's another ground for them that wasn't theirs before. You know, I have to say, David, we were very happy with Bath and we didn't have an issue. It's only that this came up and it was too good to be true. And I'm sure you will understand as well, if we'd have said, oh, can we leave it till the end of the season? There's a host of clubs, I would imagine, that would have bitten the estate agent's arm off to get their own ground.
You know, absolutely. Yeah. But I mean,
there's a lot of clubs ground sharing in our part of the world, and as time goes on, fewer and fewer stadiums available to accommodate them. So it really is what Steve said, you know, it's a question of getting in, striking while the iron's hot. And when you look at what potentially has been going on at Cricklefields with a couple of clubs arguing over whether or not they're going to be playing there, Romford moving away from Barking has left a vacancy there that one of them could possibly take up, you know.
I will say that obviously that vacancy has been taken up and has.
Who said that?
for taking over Edinburgh as well. So they actually tried to outbid us.
And that was Christos, because we can't actually see you, sir. So if you can put your camera on, we'll be able to see it. But...
Sorry, I'm actually driving at the moment, so I can't put my camera on.
That's right. No problem at all. No, that's right. You're okay. So with it all though, I mean, not only are you getting that ground as well, I mean, you're flying as well, aren't you, in the Essex Senior League today? Of course, if I'm right in saying, you've got another one of the old Isthmian sides in Mildenhall in the FA Vars. As well,
yeah, correct. Yeah, we've got those, so we know them quite well. That's at home as well. So Christos is excited because all games at home at the moment now he enjoys, because that's an opportunity again to bring in the other income streams that we need to, you know, to keep the club growing and what have you. And although it's further out, and a few people were saying, oh, I can't understand why you've moved there, at the moment it looks like our attendances are on the up as well.
Which is great. I mean, what was your sort of attendances were you getting at Barking compared to? I know the first game it was a free entry, but I mean, in the game at the weekend in the Vars, I mean, what has been the difference?
Well, we had a game in the Essex Senior Cup where our attendance was below 40, so obviously that's really disappointing. We were averaging round about 70 or 80 at Barking. But we're looking to sort of, you know, average crowds over 100 at the moment. But the other thing as well, David, that's been quite pleasing is we're getting a few East Thurrock supporters coming along now. And we're not making any pretenses. We know we're not their team. We know we're not their club. But if they live locally and just want to wander down and watch a couple of games of football, then we're trying to make them as welcome as they can. We understand their plight and we're sympathetic. I think they understand that we weren't any part of what happened to them. And in fairness, they've been very complimentary so far.
I mean, at the end of this season, then you could have a new ground, FA Vars winners, and you've got Alice playing for the Lionesses. I mean, you could be having quite a good season.
We could.
But I mean,
what order that happens, Alice, I don't know if we have to win the Vars first or you make your first England appearance. But I suppose, it, to be honest, you're truthful, David, I don't mind which way around those two things happen.
But Alice, I mean, what's with the ladies' side? How long have you sort of been involved in the ladies' side? And you know, tell us a little bit about it, because I mean, I've you know managed a couple of ladies' teams myself, and seen how well they do at Enfield Town as well. So, I mean, tell us a little bit about the setup for the ladies and how well you're doing.
So this is a new endeavour, actually. Romford Women started this season, brand new. We've drawn in players from lots of different places, and we've started with a really ambitious season. We spoke at the start of the year about wanting to be vying for promotion in our first season. So that's what we're doing.
What league are you in, Alice, at the moment?
So we're in Premier Division of the Essex Women's League. I think there were lots of discussions and arguments behind the scenes to make sure that we were placed in the Premier Division. And I think we've proved in our first six or seven fixtures that that's where we should be, and we're well placed. And we're just looking to climb those tiers and climb that ladder as quickly as we can, really.
And where does that put you after that division? What division do you jump into after that if you were successful?
So at the moment, we're at the top of Tier 7, so a promotion would take us into Tier 6.
Have you been surprised about the interest that there's been within the club for the women's section?
Good question. I think we're living in the golden age of women's football, really, and this was really great timing. We're coming off the back of a really successful Euros and a really successful World Cup. And my imminent phone call from Serena Wiegmann means that it's good timing. So we've been flattered by the fact that people have come down and watched. But I think it would be harsh of me to say that we've been surprised. I know how good Romford fans are, and they're not people to turn their nose up at good football on a Sunday, which is what we're playing.
I think that's something that I was interested in when we heard that we were starting a women's team, and that it was going to be based within the borough, with the first team playing at its home games at Barking. The important thing was to try and generate some new interest within the borough. And obviously, as Alice was saying, it's coming at the same time that England were doing so well in the World Cup, that we were trying to promote the Romford women's team alongside the England success and try and get some people interested in coming along to Noak Hill. And in so doing, it may then spark some local interest in the first team as well, in the men's team, and get some new. The biggest problem we've got, both when we were playing at Barking and again at East Thurrock, is that our support base is really, a group of us who've been following the old Romford club back in the 70s, and generating new support when you're not actually playing in the town that the club is named after is very, very difficult. And if once we do get back into Romford, I'm quite sure that it's a massive catchment area, a successful team playing within the borough is going to draw some pretty big crowds.
I mean, Christos, if you're still there, I mean, I'd be very interested to hear from you how we've heard from Steve how it sort of came about. You seem to be the man that was. You know, on the shop floor, shall we say, with the new stadium. I mean, from your opinion, how did it all come about?
To be fair, for me and Dan, how it come about was just making survives. And in order for the clubs to survive, it needs to be sustainable. And in order for clubs to be sustainable, it needs to generate money. So we had a little... Obviously, it was going up for rent. We knew that there was a couple of other clubs that are interested, i.e. likes of hashtag Grays even inquired about it until their stadium's done, etc., etc. And in with him on that Friday morning straight away and said, we'll come down and sign papers. For us, moving on it, like I said, was just to make sure that we're not paying out rent to another club and we're generating money. As I say, our my emblem when I first come into the club, and Steve knows this. And we sat down last summer for the first team and to create the women's section and to create a whole academy is for us to eventually, the men's first team, be in the National South in 8 years. Which is what I've always stuck by. And the same with the women's. When I spoke to Jason, I want a 5-year plan, 6-year plan to go into National League, to Billericay, who have done very well, getting into the National League as well. So that are the plans for us. And in order to do that, we can't be paying out rent to someone, another club, and not generate any bar money, any more ticket sales than we are already, and so on. The whole idea of it, and obviously, like Bob said as well, it's a short-term plan because we still have our plans to go back into Romford. It's a 5-year lease. We know they still want to build on the ground, which isn't a problem to us, but at the moment it's going to generate us money and it's going to keep us sustainable and not having to, without no disrespect, begging, borrowing and stealing off of people. Now we can generate our own money. As I say, I left the club about 2 hours ago and there were some locals in the pub drinking already. So we're looking to try and make sure that it's a family club, it's a community club, and we're generating money and being sustainable.
I mean, Alice, do you want to get the ladies' side over there as well eventually? Or are you happy to be there and using, you know, you guys sort of pulling in that sort of almost being like the Pied Piper? You guys are out there putting the Romford name out there and doing really, really well. And then the guys sort of follow you a little bit later on. Is that how you're looking at it? Or would you rather you come over as well and play over there and then all go over in one?
The girls have three fixtures over there coming up. So their next three home fixtures are going to be at the stadium on a Sunday. So I've already organised it with Jason, the manager. I'm sure he'll out to the girls ready. But yeah, they will look to go over there with commitments for the girls and so on and so on.
Sounds good, Alice.
Yeah, I think both options are great. Like, we want to play in the stadium because playing in stadiums is really fun. And we want people to be able to come and watch us, and we want those people who are coming to watch us to be able to have a pint because that's a good time. But we're also, like, we're proud to be representing Romford. Like, I'm sitting in Romford on this call. Like, this is my home. I like playing here. So being part of, we know that it's not a short term. Like, this is a long-term journey. And as a club, like, we've been really dedicated to, like, sustainability, but also equity. And this stadium is not like the men's team stadium. It's Romford Stadium. So games will take place there, like, in whichever order they do.
Steve, I mean, did you ever sort of, like, you know, for me, I mean, is the plan this year to try and get out of the Essex Senior League this year? I mean, is that what we're trying to do? Get back into, for me, where you belong, back into the Isthmian?
The word Isthmian's been banned by Dan, our manager. If Colin, I or Christos mention that word, then we're fined. Let's put it this way, David. Our short-term aim is to move up the pyramid. No disrespect to any of the Essex Senior League teams, but apart from Tilbury this year, I don't think anyone's likely to bring any supporters to us. And we like the atmosphere that you get when you've got a Bury Town or a Heybridge Swifts or Grays Athletic or any of those local clubs that bring 30 or 40 down. You have a good atmosphere, you have a bit of banter in the bar afterwards and what have you. That's what we want. But we also don't want to be disrespectful. The Essex Senior League is a very, very tough league at the moment. There's three or four very good sides, and then there's probably another half a dozen good sides. Only one team can go up automatically, and out of the next four in the playoffs, because we've got playoffs this year, only one of those can go up. So, you know, I'm pretty sure we'll be there or thereabouts. And yeah, this is our second year in the Essex Senior League. We don't want another year in the Essex Senior League, but it doesn't just happen on a wing and a prayer or a wish. You know, we've got to end up with more points than anyone else in the league. I think we've got a squad that's capable of it. I mean, whether Dan wants to add to that squad or not, I don't know. I mean, managers usually do. We've got the Vars coming up, which let's hope it's not a distraction like it was last year, but we've come into it a lot later this year. We haven't lost any fixtures yet. So everything's good. But yeah, we want to push on and we want to be back in step four as soon as we possibly can.
And are you still in that situation as well, though, mate, where, you know, I know when we've spoken on previous and almost all the times that we've spoken, of course, you get, you know, it used to be a situation where, you know, Romford would have a couple of players, they're banging in the goals, or a goalkeeper pulling off save after save after save, and then you turn around, look back again, and someone to come along and pinch them. I mean, are you still in that scenario, or are you in a little bit better position?
Yeah, right now, because Chris is charging £4 for a packet of crisps, so we're not going to lose any players this year because they're going to go off. No, there's a very good team spirit at the moment. Players want to play for the club. I mean, look, people are always going to put in 7 days, we know that. But at the moment, I don't think we've lost anyone so far.
I think the only players that have left the first team squad are because they couldn't get into the team. It's not that they were our better players that were being poached. It was that they were kind of squad players who couldn't get a regular place and have left of their own accord.
So, yeah, I mean, you're right. That used to happen. You know, every time someone was doing well, they'd get picked off, but that's not the case now, and especially with a new ground. I mean, we've had people down there sort of up a ladder painting at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then at 1 o'clock they grab their bag and go in the changing room, and, you know, there's been players down there all the time. I left the other night at 7:15, and there were still 9 players in the bar and what have you. It's just fostered a really good atmosphere, and, you know, I know money talks, but I think that sort of, you know, there'd have to be some sort of pretty sort of, you know, good bids for some of our players, because they're happy at the moment. They're happy. They're doing well. They're still in the Vars. We're in with a chance of, you know, doing well in the league. You know, it's personally, I can't see why somebody would move on. I know players do, but at the moment, everyone says that they're happy there.
I think the Essex Senior, I had somebody say the other week, actually, that the Essex Senior League is very much like the National League. In the means of one goes up, one goes off through the playoffs, and it's probably one of the hardest leagues to actually get out of. And I think the Essex Senior League is a little bit like that, isn't it? Once you sort of, because if you look down the list of who's in there, you've got teams in there now that used to be, we won't use the word, but we'll use pitching in teams, shall we say, you know, and so forth. So now it becomes a little bit more difficult. So I think it's one of those things where it becomes a, you know, a very, very difficult league, you know, to get out of. And would you agree it's a, you know, in that way?
Yeah, I think people that aren't in the lower leagues, you know, once you go below step four, sort of tend to be quite dismissive. And then you've got to look at the players that are playing at step five, you know, I mean, we've got players that have played a lot higher level, and so have other teams, you know, and teams are pulling their players from, you know, you've only got to look at sort of, you know, teams like Tilbury and Woodford and the players that they've got, you know, they're pulling new players in from step four, you know, so they're very experienced and they're very good. But we've got a good side as well, David. And, you know, we had a little blip at the beginning, well, no, in the middle, we started off like a rocket, and then we had a blip for 3 or 4 weeks, and now we seem to have found our feet again. And, you know, we had 3 games at the new ground, we've won all 3, and, you know, it's just really good, you know. And the thing now on a Sunday, sort of when I sit down on a Sunday evening, is to go through all of the results and see if we can get a nap selection, like if the first team have won, the women have won, the girls and the boys teams have won, you know, then that's fantastic. If all the results come in and we've all won, then it's a happy Sunday.
Yeah, I must admit, we haven't had many of them myself. But with it though, you must be, the enthusiasm that you speak about the club and Bob has and Christos has and Alice has, it feels like there's a real sort of, I wouldn't say necessarily new broom, but a real sort of breath of fresh air around the whole club now. And it really does feel like all of us, you know, where you had the worries previously when we've spoken previously before, now all of a sudden it just feels like the club's sort of motoring on forward and hoping to be pushing back to maybe where you were before, but even higher.
I think it's the atmosphere, though, you know, isn't it, Bob? You know, it's a really good atmosphere before the game. You know, supporters are still saying, this is ours, isn't it? This is actually ours. This is our home. Look, take my picture in front of the sign or in front of the badge. And that's one of the things that we want the women to experience as well when they come along, you know, and then, of course, they put that on their Instagram and their social media, and then that sort of generates more interest, and then their friends might come along and watch them. And as I say, it's quite right what Alice was saying. It's not separate teams. We're not like a company with lots of different departments. We're a club, you know, and within that club, there are different teams, but we're all part of one club. We've got the same kit, got the same ethos, the same badge, you know, and as Alice will tell you from a Sunday, got the same set of supporters as well. You know, it's not a different lot of supporters that are going to watch the women. It's supporters that are watching the game on a Saturday and then watching the game on the Sunday. And conversely, a lot of the women come along to our games and watch them now.
Yeah, we've had several of the women's team turn up for the first game, and a couple of them have been back since then. So, you know, they're not just supporting the first team, but checking out the facilities and seeing what they're going to be getting when the women's team actually get the opportunity to play there.
I think one of the things when I ran, you know, women's teams I was involved with Harlow and also with Waltham Abbey mainly. I think the toughest thing was always a case of you never knew where your next game was going to be. Do you know what I mean? So it would be like you never had one that was just round the corner. It would always be one that was miles and miles away. Do you know what I mean? We used to play people like Fulham Death team and teams like this that were right out by Wembley Stadium and stuff like this. But the other thing that I always used to sort of enjoy with them as well is when you actually looked at your league table or a cup competition and just to see the different names. So rather than seeing the Tilburys and the Barkings and stuff like that, you get to see teams like Toby FC that you play at the weekend. You know, so I mean, tell us a little bit more about some of the teams you're playing in your league, Alice. I mean, have you got sort of familiar names in there, or are they sort of names that maybe, you know, it's not the greatest expression to use, but the dinosaur male football fan that thinks, you know, is there names that we wouldn't sort of know?
Yeah, that's so interesting. I'd never even thought of that. But yeah, we played Toby at the weekend. We've got Tigers, Corinthians, definitely a few names in there that you wouldn't, not geographical football terms, for sure. But I think, that narrative that you have about having to travel a long way for games is definitely what I experienced when I was growing up. And I've been playing football a very long time now. And actually, I'm experiencing it much, much less so recently. I think within our league, our furthest away fixture is probably 45 minutes to an hour outside of Romford. So the fact that we have so many more women's teams, sometimes poorly named, means that these leagues are now much more competitive, and it allows people to be travelling fans in a much easier way. You're not rocking up at industrial estates 2 or 3 hours away.
I was just looking at going through some of the tweets and then to see, pick up some other names. But I mean, he's of course, his names that, you know, we recognise in Bowers Ladies, Clarets Women, Frontiers Ladies, I know very, very well because, of course, they're from Harlow. If that's the same Frontiers Ladies.
It is.
Harlow. Lee Ram Ladies, First Tigers, FC Stanway, and as you said, Corinthians FC as well. I mean, how many is there actually in your league? Is it just the eight, or is there more?
No, we're in a league of 18.
I'm right. Okay.
Yeah. Proper league. We're the Premier Division of. I think there's two tiers below us. So is now. Women's football looks much, much different to women's football that I entered when I was 18, for sure.
Tell us a little bit about the team itself and the players you've got, and you know, are they quite local to Romford, or are they sort of like, you know, do they travel in and you know, and where else have you yourself personally played before?
Yeah, a little bit of a mix of both. So we've got quite a few of our players came with Jason, our manager, when he joined. He was managing a team based over in Chingford. So we've got a few players who are over from Chingford. We've got quite a few local people, Romford, Ornchurch, Raynham, out this sort of way. So yeah, quite a local team. I think we span in ages from 17 to 35, maybe. So quite an eclectic mix of girls, but women that I really enjoyed playing with. Yeah, I joined from Clapton Community. I'd played there for 7 years. So have come from a club with a really big fan base, who bought their stadium last year, and have done that really successfully. So it's really interesting watching a club do it in a slightly different way, with hopefully similar impacts and similar numbers through the door and similar revenue.
I mean, I'm just looking at some of the names that Danny. I mean, when you said 17 to 35, I'm taking it you're the 17.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I mean, how difficult is that? I mean, we talk to Mousel when they come on later on, and they talk about how the distance they get from, you know, from they have to travel 8,000 miles to away games this season. So, I mean, with you, how difficult is it when, you know, you sort of, and I know what it used to be like for myself. I mean, I know that the Wolf family side that I had previously, we won the County Cup 1 year, went to the first round of the Cup the following year, and only one lady turned up. You know, it was like, what's going on here? Like, you know, where is it? Where's everybody? Do you know what I mean? You know, that's on that sort of front. Is that, you know, how difficult is that with getting the ladies there? And I know, as I said to you before we started, with my niece, you know, like they've only got 10 players for Sunday. Is it a case with your side though, that it's a lot more sort of commitment there to everybody turn up at the training sessions? And do you ever have that sort of issue at all?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, like, echoing the feeling that within Romford at the moment, it's about when you have those moments when people aren't turning up, like, that's always going to happen in Sunday League football. Women have got jobs, women have got school. We've got a few kids who have got their mock exams coming up who are doing revision at the weekend. Like, people have got commitments outside of football. This is no one's full-time job. But it is also like, it's the joy in everyone's week. So we haven't struggled to put out a team. Other teams in our league have struggled to put out a team this season. It's not something that's strange to football, full stop. But at the moment, we've been really lucky in that we've been able to name squads of 15 every week. We've been able to get people down at training. And inevitably, we've already started getting hit with the 35-year-olds knocking in with a few injuries. But that's why we've got the youth in the squad, to make sure that we make it through the cold winter, which is hard on the joints.
I think one of the problems, David, as well, certainly, I mean, Alice, tell me if I'm wrong now, but when my daughter was playing, at the younger age, when she was playing 11, 12, 13, there was enough girls' teams within a sort of 10-mile radius to get a league going. But yeah, when she got to 14, 15 or 16, a lot of girls, stroke women, had stopped playing. So then you find you're going to Southend or you're going to Clacton or you're going sort of to Ipswich and what have you, which, let's face it, I ran a boys' team for 8 years, and if we'd have had to go to those places, I wouldn't have been running the team. Used to moan if you had to go to Billericay or Brentwood or whatever. With boys' football, and I don't know if it's, well, I know it's still the same for boys, but Alice, you might be able to let me know for the women, but it's easy to run a boys' team, in as much as you're probably not, you can be in a league and not have to go more than 5 or 6 miles. Even men's football, my two boys play men's football. I think the furthest they go for a game is Woodford. If you're a women's team, you know, and what you've got to remember as well, if you've got a 2 o'clock kickoff in Clacton, that's your day gone. That's not a football match. That's leaving home at what, 11:30 and perhaps getting back at 6:30, 7 o'clock. You know, and if you're a woman or someone, not just a woman, but you know, with non-league, you're then doing a night shift because it's we have the same at our level and even at step four. You know, if someone's committed or their boss says you've got to come and work on a Saturday and they're paying you, then you have to get to work on a Saturday. Although everyone takes it seriously, it is at the end of the day, it's just a hobby, isn't it, at this level.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I've never thought about that impact on girls' football because I was obviously just living in it. So it's difficult to do a direct comparison. But I'm a teacher in a secondary school. So I see it in girls' PE quite often. And it's often a discussion around tables in terms of curriculum planning. And it was a huge discussion following the Euros. Ian Wright and Leah Williamson like made a huge fuss about the idea of what girls PE should look like, because you're right, there is a drop off in girls taking part in football and sport in general when they reach 13, 14, 15. And it's about how do we change that narrative? And the changing of that narrative is around creating safe and inclusive spaces for girls and for women, and creating environments in which they feel equal and they feel a part of the wider system. And I think actually the club mentality that's being created at Romford, so we train next to the under-16s, we talk to the under-16s, we know them all by name, we go and watch their games when we can on a Sunday. And that means that that step from the under-16s up to the women's team doesn't seem so stressful, doesn't seem like such a gulf. And if you're able to create that throughout the club, if you're able to create role models and women who these young girls are able to look up to, who they can meet and are tangible human beings, then hopefully that drop off becomes lesser. But we're living in the first generation of girls and women for whom role models that are on television, whom their mum and dad and grandparents can name, like this is the first generation of people for whom that's a reality. And I think we'll see the impact of that trickle down into grassroots football.
Well, I'll be openly honest with you, Alice. I'm a massive women's football fan. I used to have a season ticket down at Arsenal, and that before it was massive, and people like Kelly Smith playing, and one of my all-time football heroes is Kelly Smith. So yeah, it's just phenomenal to see. But does that actually get to? I mean, I was watching literally just before we came on air, I was watching League of Their Own, and Mary Earps was on there, and you see the likes of somebody like Mary Earps and some of these blokes, they're giving her some stick, and she's straight back at them, like, you know, like a top rate comedian. Do you know what I mean? Straight away, no messing about. She's straight back in there, but the respect she got even from the small audience in there were all standing up and cheering her and clapping her and singing "Is Only One Mary Earps." That helps sort of women's football, I think. And maybe people like yourself as well, being school teachers, you know, when you've got those young girls there that can actually talk to you and find out your experiences of playing women's football, will help dramatically to bring those youngsters through into, you know, in the years to come.
Yeah, it has to happen both ways. So like top-down development or trickle-down economics is one way of developing a system, but we need to build it from the grassroots too. So it's equally important that people see it in their everyday lived experiences. It's not just the superstar on telly. It's not the, like when I was young, it was Kelly Smith and Rachel Yankee. It's not just the Kelly Smiths and Rachel Yankees. It's like, yeah, my auntie plays football, or my teacher plays football, or my dentist plays football. That's equally important. And creating that sustainable system is the steps forward that we need.
I think, you know,
I still think there's a way to go, though. I mean, although it's massively increased in popularity and is getting more airtime, but you know, I won't mention any names for fear of sort of being sued or anything, but, you know, not bringing out a Mary Earps shirt, for example. I mean, can you imagine that in the men's game if they said, look, we're not going to do a Jordan Pickford shirt for the World Cup because we don't think we'll sell many. So I think there's a lot of work to be done there. I think the coaching needs to be better. I think that coaching sports coaching in junior schools where they don't bring anyone in for PPE time can be woeful and inadequate, not just in football, but just for teaching. You know, you've got some poor year three or four teacher who then suddenly has to go out on the sports field and do an hour's PE lessons with them as well. And also, when the FA are saying that they're doing loads for grassroots football, women's football, I want to see some tangible evidence, because it's no good sort of having sort of women's team and girls' teams and then turning up and there's inadequate changing room facilities. You know, it's got to be a professional approach. And I think just having somewhere to change and decent toilet facilities, that's a minimum for anyone playing sport and football. You know, because people are paying thousands of pounds a year for pitch hire, and I wouldn't mind betting that you're losing a lot of people you're losing a lot of people over the course of a season or whatever, just sort of saying, oh, do you know what? You know, I'm fed up, you know, driving all this way and getting changed in my car. You know, the facilities have got to be better.
I think my biggest concern, and I know we've gone off the subject of Romford a little bit, but my biggest concern, and Alison, I don't know if you'll agree with me with this. I've got one, and say I'm a massive, massive fan, and Keith tells me off all the time for bringing up women's football all the time. But my one biggest concern around the women's football at this present minute in time is the reason why women's football was such an attractive thing to go and watch was it was a very much a family sport. That's the right word to use. So at the end of the game, Leah Williams would come round, Kelly Smith would come round, Jill Scott, whoever it might be, whichever team you're supporting, and you'd stand there for ages afterwards, and it'd all come round slowly but surely, the whole team signing autographs, talking to the youngsters, having their photographs taken, etc., etc. My biggest concern with it all now is because it's going into the bigger stadiums, into the Emirates and into White Hart Lane and Filbert Street, and etc., 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 that you lose that connection between the players and the fans. And I think that's my biggest concern, because I think that is the one thing that makes women's football so great and to bring youngsters through is that contact that they can get with the superstars like Mary Earps and, you know, Ella Toon and all the rest of them, you know, Russo and et cetera, et cetera. And that's where I think we've got to be that women's football got to be very, very careful that they don't lose that contact with the young fan. And because if you go in there, it's a family thing. It's always a family day out when you go and see the ladies' football. You've got the men there, you've got the ladies there, the boys, the girls. And I think if you lose that, that's when we could end up sort of going backwards fans-wise and with women's football. I don't know if you agree, Alice.
Yeah, it's a really tricky one because you've got two, like, what is the aim of women's football? The aim of women's football is to be an elite sport. And in doing that, it's like the aim of them being there is not to create a family friendly atmosphere. That's not on the players. But what is important is we've watched the trajectory of men's football. We've watched how it's altered over the years. We've watched the way that capitalism has impacted on the game, for better or worse, depending on where you're sitting. And women's football has an opportunity to decide what it wants to look like, and what its end goal is. And like the FA banned women from playing for 50 years. So it's their job to now make the investment and to bridge the gap in order to create a society and a space in which all women, non-binary and trans people can play and express themselves.
Well, let me introduce you to somebody else has just popped up on the screen you might have seen. And of course, he's another gentleman that is a big, big attribute to this show. So this is Andrew Large, and he is the secretary of Mousel Football Club, who are I've got to get this right with my directions, the furthest westerly club in the country. They play in the Southern League South, and having a fantastic season, stepping up from step five, Steve, last year into step four this year. So, Andrew, let me introduce you to everybody.
Thank you.
The club that's on tonight is a club that is very, very close to my heart, very, very close. And we keep saying it, and I've said it again, the second time I'll say it tonight. If Heineken did chairman, the gentleman up there with the Nike shirt on, Steve, he would be the face of Heineken, because one of the best guys in non-league football you're ever likely to meet. So let me introduce you. So above you, just to your left-hand side, is Alice. And Alice is the captain of Romford Ladies. And then to the right is Steve, the chairman.
Hi, Andrew.
The main man, the living legend of non-league football, he is as well. And Bob is joining us as well. Bob, what is your actual title in the club?
I don't really have an official
title. It's official. Not bad. He's being too modest. His official title is Get Bob to Do It.
Yeah. And of course, let me just say it's Andrew as well at the bottom. But Andrew, I mean, a weekend, I heard, you know, saw the result, and I was actually sneaky on Saturday. I was doing commentary for Enfield Town. I had my Mousel shirt on underneath my jumper. And I was watching the thing because I'm doing commentary. I can only see it just says Mousel goal, and I'm thinking, we scored or have we not scored? Do you know what I mean? I have to quit bricking it down to have a look to see where it went. And of course, we came out on the end of a 3-2 defeat against Wimbledon at the weekend. But it sounded like it was a really, really good game.
It was a fantastic game, superb standard of football for that level, and 636 people there, which is the biggest crowd Mousel have ever played in front of. And I think if that standard of football can be maintained, you'll see gates going up, because it was fantastic entertainment. End-to-end stuff. Wimborne, possibly title favourites. Big club, well-resourced, great players. Fantastic style of football. But we came very close. Very, very close to causing a bit of an upset. So although the result is disappointing, the performance and the occasion just fill us with joy, because we are we're newcomers to Step Four. We're still feeling our way. We're 10 games in, of which 7 have been away, amazingly. And that'll all be put right by Christmas, because we've got 5 home games coming up and only 2 away. So round about Boxing Day, we'll have completed nearly half the season's fixtures, and we'll know where we stand. But we're very, very happy with where we are, learning every week, game management, pressing, long-range shooting, great stuff. It's just fantastic to be here.
And you've got Evesham at home at the weekend, and then you've got that lovely long trip again the weekend after, haven't you?
Yes, the 500 miles to Malvern Town. And as you know, we've been there once already this season in the FA Trophy.
It'd be cheaper to have stayed over, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I just saw your face, Steve, when he said it. It was just...
Yeah, we used to moan about going 110 miles up to Wroxham. I suppose that's just a brisk book for you guys, is it, Andrew?
Yeah, well... You have to have a thought for the away teams coming to us as well. Evesham are travelling 485 miles return trip on Saturday. And it's one of those weird things of geography, isn't it? Because at Step Four, we can only be in the Southern League South. Yes. We can't be in any other division. But both Malvern and Evesham, who are both Worcestershire clubs, could just as easily be in the Central Division and have probably less travel to do, but, you know, more east to west rather than north to south.
I mean, when you got promoted from Step Five, was your first phone call congratulating you from the local coach company? Or
I think the local coach company were rubbing their hands with glee at the prospect of lucrative contracts. But with the coach company, we compete with other clubs in Cornwall as well, all of whom have to travel. Mm. So you've got Falmouth, Helston, Truro City, of course, but also Cornish Pirates rugby team. Everyone has to travel. Yeah, that's...
Does it make it hard to recruit players?
I think the way to recruit players is twofold. One is if you've got a good coaching style and you've got something that particularly young players feel it's worth coming to the club to improve. That's one aspect of it. The second is getting players in who will settle in Cornwall from elsewhere, who will settle in Cornwall and get jobs. Yeah, so it's a tall order. It's a tall order. But we've got quite a lot of local players who've made the step up and are doing really well. They're the ones who are committed in the sense that if we go to an away match, they're away from home from 7 o'clock in the morning till midnight. So you need that sort of commitment as well as commitment to bettering yourself as a footballer. It's like a big lifestyle thing. I mean, thank goodness we've got 18, 20 players who are prepared to do that. They may not always be prepared to do it, but there we are. And then you've got the other problem, of course, is you take a starting 11 and five subs to an away match. So they travel all, but two players don't kick a ball. Mm. You can only bring on three subs at the moment. So we've made our case to the FA through their survey about subs, where we think it should be five, name five and play five, because you're really causing a problem with participation if you take too many players who can't play. Yeah, they just warm up basically.
And of course, Stevie, for your information, because I know Andrew said it a few times before, but their local derby is Tavistock, and Andrew will tell you how far that is.
90 miles single journey, 180 mile round trip across the River Tamar into Devon, where Cornishmen fear to tread.
And that's the local derby, but it's quite interesting, because I went last weekend. It puts travel into, because Andrew comes on every week and says, this is where I'm travelling to, or this is where I'm travelling to, or we've had Waltham Abbey on, or we've had Ware on, or whatever else, some of the local clubs that are in the Southern League's central on, you know, and they say, I've got to travel here, or I've got to travel there, and etc. And we went to Somerset last weekend, and we're travelling up for Waltham Abbey, and we're going, we've had a stop, and then we got back in the car and just carried on. And all of a sudden, I just turned to the missus and said, blimey, there's Cirencester. Do you know what I mean? And we were almost at our destination, or not far from our destination, probably half an hour, 45 minutes away from where we were going. And I'm thinking, Struth, I know when Waltham Abbey say when they've got to go to Cirencester, and you heard Cirencester saying the same thing when they've got to come down there, but
yeah,
it's not until you actually get in the car and actually do that journey you realise literally how far away some of these clubs are.
Yeah.
It's just mind-blowing.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things from our point of view is we knew that if we got promoted, that's what we'd have to do. So it's not a surprise. It's not a shock. I mean, one of the things is you've got to have the finance to know that you can complete all the away games in a season. Otherwise, you're going to end up with the players travelling by car, which isn't the best thing. So basically, all our away games, we have a coach, except Tavistock. Yeah.
Going back to what we were talking about earlier with Alice about sort of, you know, it can be harder sometimes for women and girls teams because there's more men and boys that want to play football. Isn't there a thriving sort of women's football down there?
Yeah, it's growing. It's growing. There's actually quite a high standard Cornwall Women's Football League. In which Mousel have got a women's team, and it's obviously local, it's Cornwall only, but there's quite a clamour to get into that team, you know, including from the youth, the girls' sections, the girls' teams in the youth section, which I think is the key to it. Getting them in early and show them a progression.
That's pre-season sorted, Alice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get a coach.
there are actually some good women's football teams in Cornwall that play in, I don't know what the league is called, but it's higher than the Cornwall League itself. So I think Helston Athletic and Liscard, they play in a higher league, and one of them, I can't remember which, is doing quite well in the Women's FA Cup. So it's all good.
Well, one thing we should say before we because time's running away from us is that of course Mousel are looking at doing a crowdfunder at the moment for of course their new road. Of course you can go onto their website. You can also go onto crowdfunder and look for Mousel AFC New Road. They've got some rewards as well for people, and I'll go through some of that if I can, Andrew, just quickly. I mean, for £100 or more, you can get a brick in the road as a piece of Mousel history. £8 or more is a voucher at Jam Records in Cafe Falmouth. You've got some other ones around, Tires in Falmouth, £10 for the website Hall of Fame. You get £10 or more for Bailey's Country Store voucher. You've got dog vouchers. You've got heritage walks on here. Fish and chip supper. That always sounds good to me. History of, you can get a book, a signed book on the history of Subutia for a certain amount as well. But there was a couple down here that really, sort of took my eye when I read them. And I'm just going to try and find them if I can. Flick down to try and find some of £25 or more for a sports massage. So just in case you're interested, anybody there? Of course, their fantastic T-shirt, the Pasty Thief T-shirt, £30 or more. But I'm just trying to find the one that £35 or more. We get MOT for your car. Anybody? £50 or more for boiler service. Now, this is the ones we're getting to now. So £65 or more, dinner, bed and breakfast at the Britannia Inn. £80 or more, golf at Cape Cornwall. £150 or more. I think this is the one that took my eye. £150 or more, Landovano Holiday Cottage for a four-night stay. £175 or more, three nights at the Carbis Bay Airbnb. You can get an electric survey. So if the new ground needs an electric survey, £200 or more. £225 or more, three nights at the Mousel Cottage. £240 for an M&S Beauty Advent calendar. Corporate video, £250. VIP ticket to the awards dinner, £250. That was the one I was going to ask you. The £250 or more for the VIP awards dinner, is that the Southern League Awards or is that an awards that you do at Mousel? Do you know, Andrew?
I think it might be the Southern League one. I'm not sure.
You won't need that, David, will you?
No, I don't need that one. I'm all right.
my favourite is the £25,000 stadium naming rights.
Yeah, and the other one that took my name, which I think this one could go down in posterity because this is the one, if I had the money, I would definitely do it without a shadow of a doubt. £20,000 or more. And you get to name the road.
Oh, wow.
So that would get, do you know what I mean? That would be something that would go down into your history. So it could be, you know, you could £20,000 or more from your, when you get that contract with England Alice, it could be called the Alice Sharp Road. Do you know what I mean?
It it's could. Something,
huh? Yeah. It should.
Yeah. But it's 20,000, I'll be buried under it, I should imagine.
It actually costs a lot to build. I think it's about 150, 200 metres of new road. We've actually got the land to build it on, and it bypasses, the new road will bypass the little village that the football club is situated in. And, of course, all the traffic currently coming to the club, which is increasing because our gates are increasing, they are, in effect, a nuisance to the local villagers. They're bound to be, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, without even trying, you just get more traffic, more noise and all that sort of stuff. So we're trying to sell this as an advantage, not just to the football club, but to the local residents as well. And it comes off a sort of a main road that goes to Land's End. So it's, it's a possible stopping off point as well. When you go into Land's End to get the aeroplane to the Isles of Scilly, pop into Mousel and watch a football match. Mm-hmm. And have a pasty, Dave.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Oh, and listen, Steve, if you get the chance and you do go down to Cornwall, or Alice or Bob, you get down to, or even Christos, if you're going down to Cornwall, that's a definite stop for you, is to go into Mousel, because it's a fantastic football ground. Probably... And I don't know if you've ever been to a football ground in your career, Stephen. You've been to more games than I have, where every single advertising hoarding all the way around the ground, inside the fencing and outside of the fencing, facing the supporters, is covered with advertising. and also all the way across the main stand as well. It's incredible. I've never seen it anywhere. Coming from something like Harlow, where there was like, you know, half a dozen, you know, to see that he's absolutely incredible. But of course, one thing we should say before we go tonight is, as well, that we wish Mousel all the very, very best on Thursday night. It's come around very, very quickly.
It has.
Mousel are going to Anfield and Liverpool FC on Thursday night, where they could be awarded the best non-league club in the country. That would be fantastic if that was to happen. And if we could get a double header that they get named.
Yes, and you as well.
And if they could get non-league club of the season,
that'd be good.
The Southern League Goal Show could actually win their category as well. It'll be a good night. So
next Monday should be quite interesting. If that be interesting.
Well, if the show's not on next Monday, you know that we didn't win. So
okay, you're sulking.
Yeah, we didn't win, so we won't be in next week. Yeah, we're both having supping something a bit stronger. But I think Derek's going, isn't he? Is it Derek going and
Derek and Kevin and Pablo?
Yeah, so they're
our three. Well, the two media blokes, because I think to some extent it's the media presence, which is a recent upsurge in the development of the club, that's actually drawn the attention.
Definitely.
Can I just say something, Dave, before you close? We met a very interesting person at Wimborne on Saturday. And it's a bit of a quiz question. We met the general manager of Wimborne, whose name is Jimmy Glass.
Ah, there we go.
Who is the goalkeeping goal scorer who scored in injury time in 1999 to keep Carlisle in the Football League.
I didn't know that. I didn't know Jimmy was there.
Yeah, he came up for the corner, ball came at him, and he snatched it and, you know, riotous scenes.
Yeah. And
Alice is looking at us going, I have no idea who Jimmy Glass is. She's only 17, remember?
I'm 17. I wasn't even born.
Yeah, but he's a celebrity. If you go online and put the name Jimmy Glass in, you see all the sort of YouTube videos of that goal and the celebrations. But it kept Carlisle in the Football League with about, you know, 30 seconds to go at the end of the season. And it was against Plymouth Argyle, but it relegated Scarborough Athletic. And that was the start of Scarborough's decline.
Yeah, they went out of business a couple of years later, didn't they?
They did indeed, yeah. So isn't it interesting? Fine margins, a few minutes. Fine margins dictate an important part of your history.
Yeah. And what is Jimmy down at Wimborne?
General manager.
See, right, okay. I can feel a phone call coming on. Yeah.
The reason for finding all this out is whenever we go on our travels, now we're at step four and it's a much more sort of professional setup all round. We're always keen to learn how the host club are organised.
Mm.
Yeah. And we're rapidly coming to the conclusion that you can't carry on running a club at that level purely from volunteers. Yeah, that's the lesson we're finding.
You have the goodwill and you always need that, Andrew, but you also need areas of expertise as well.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, especially in the commercial department.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's a lot of administration and sort of, it's almost legal level secretarial work that we've found has got to happen at step four. And that's in a way been one of the biggest step ups we've, excuse the pun, that we've had to come to terms with, not just on the football field, but going from five to four, it's like a world of difference in how clubs are organised. And there are some big clubs at step four who've seen better days. So they're able to advise us, you know, what it's like.
No, absolutely. Well, listen, mate, we wish you guys all the very best. I hope to see Derek and Pablo and everybody else
on
Thursday night with my lady wife. We'll be up there on Thursday night, fingers crossed, as long as the weather doesn't kick in to make it any worse than Storm Deborah. And why do they always call bad storms after women? We'll leave it there. I've no idea. I've no idea why it's done that. But we'll be back next week. Hopefully we'll have something to show next week, but if we don't, we don't, but we'll definitely be back next week. We wish Alice, all the very, very best of luck with Romford Ladies. And we really do, because you're part of a fantastic club, Alice, and we wish you all the very, very best going forward with your team. And of course, as well to Christos, and I know he's still driving, and thank you for coming to join us tonight. And of course to Bob, and of course to the living legend of non-league football himself, Mr. Steve Garden. Fantastic to see you looking so well, sir. And thank you for joining us again tonight. Me and hopefully Keith will be back next week. But until then, good night.
Good luck.